Folks, I'd like you to welcome Joylene this morning. Joylene's going to share with me and us together. Before we do that, just a quick recap on where we have been. We started a series on relationships and in particular looking at the whole issue of dignity. And the concept of dignity comes from the reality that we as men and women have been made in the image of God, who bestows us, who infuses us with his dignity, with his glory. We're made in his image. We are like him, but we are not him. So there's a distinction to make. So we looked at that, and then we looked at the biblical passages in Genesis 1, 2 and 3, remember, about the equality of men and women. Last week, we looked at the differences from a very broad, stereotypical viewpoint. And I just realised that perhaps in the process of that, some of you didn't feel very dignified. So if that was the case, then my apologies. This morning, we're going to chat to Joylene. We've always been blessed, well, I've always been blessed in this church to have women who are prepared to tell their story about what it means to be a woman of God. And because far be it from me to tell you what it means to be a woman of God, right? So that would be very inappropriate. But before we launch into that, I just want to read to you the epilogue of the book of Proverbs. And in your NIV, this will be called The Wife of Noble Character. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still night. Somebody say, amen. She provides food for her family and portions for her female servants. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds a distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear of her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed, and she is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honour her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. What a fantastic summary of a wife of noble character, a woman of dignity. And our goal, our desire, is for you ladies to be blessed and encouraged, empowered and challenged in the process of this talk. So again, would you welcome Joylene? And Joylene's going to kick off with some opening comments. Over to you, Joylene.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I have never done this before. I feel a little bit embarrassed and a little bit nervous because Pastor John asked me to talk about my life. He wanted me to talk about marriage and relationships. And I have been married since 1973. And my marriage has been almost perfect. And in hindsight, I had to look at that. And one of the reasons why I say almost perfect is that my husband, John, has been away for almost 75% of that time. So, and the almost is because of the 20, 25%. So where do I start? I met John when I was 15, but I rang him this morning. Actually, he rang me, and he's actually away now, as you can see, and he's on a boat sailing into Pearl Bay. I actually thought he said Pearl Harbour first, and then I thought that was too far away. So what he said to me, he said, Joylene, he said, just speak from the heart. And I thought, that's fantastic, so I will. And I've decided that I would definitely speak from the heart. So these are my notes. I want to just take you back to last week when Pastor John said about cherishing. And he said, wives, respect your husband, and husbands, cherish your wife, or cherish your wife. And I looked up in the dictionary, and to cherish is to embrace, to look after kindly, to encourage, and there's lots of other adjectives. And to respect your husband is to be concerned for them, hold them in esteem and great regard. And I thought, wow, to be cherished, I have been cherished all my life. I have been cherished by my mother. And it's really an unusual situation because my mother was very German and Lutheran German, very Christian and very strong in her faith. And she was the youngest of 13, seven brothers. And there was no hope for her. She could dance and she could sing and she could yodel and she would play with two spoons. She was an amazing mother. And she met and married my dad when he came back from leave from the war. And she was 18 when they got married, and my dad was 9 years older. And he had come out from England, and he was authoritarian. He was stern and quiet. And when he came back from the war, he said, there was no God. And there's my mum, full on being a full Christian, and there's my dad saying, no, there's no God. You need to know later in life, my dad actually became a born-again Christian, and that was just amazing. And my mum died at a young age because at the age of 13, she started smoking. There was no hope for her. And she'd say to us, I had an older sister and a younger brother. And she'd say, don't smoke, dirty habit. But along the way, I actually met John at the tender age of 15. And we had a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. And he just cherished me, which was lovely. I could do anything.
And does he still cherish you?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So how does he cherish you, if I can interrupt?
You may. And John actually cherishes me even though he's away. And I'll give you an example of this. Last week, we wanted to sell our Nissan Patrol. And he's still away. He's been away for 2 weeks sailing the seas. I'm not a sailor. And he said, Joylene, he just rang me. We ring every morning and every night. 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. But he rang me in the middle of the day and he said, Joylene, he said, a man named Adam is coming to see you to look at the Nissan Patrol. I said, yeah, that's fine. And then he hung up and I thought, well, that's okay. Then he rang back and he said, do you think you could go and heat up the Nissan Patrol because there's a little heater or something on it so that it'll start first time when this man came? I said, yes, I can do that. Then he rang me back and said, oh, he said, his name's Adam and he should be okay. He's a manager of a woodwork company at Maroochydore. I said, oh, that's okay, that's fine. And I thought, okay. And then he rang back and he said, oh, I'm so sorry to ring you. He said, I didn't mean to interrupt your day. And I said, no, that's fine. You're fine. I wasn't doing very much anyway. That was about the fourth one. Then he rang back and said, Joylene, he said, I just have to tell you I could be out of range for my 7 p.m. telephone. I said, well, that's okay. But when I look at it, he was concerned for me in the fact that someone was coming to see me and he didn't want me to be quite dumb when it comes to vehicles, because I am. And a vehicle for me has to go from A to B. So he can cherish me even afar. He knew me, he knew my strengths, he knew I wasn't very good at cars. But also, he didn't want me to be afraid that a strange man was coming to my place. So, yes, he can cherish me, and there's the little things that count. So, does that answer your question?
It does. So, let's go back to when you were 15.
Ha!
Well, he was 15.
Look, when you're boyfriend, girlfriend, you're very young at 15 and 16, and we still had a relationship because I was a medical stenographer at the Port Lincoln Hospital. and I am a little bit of a gypsy inside. And then I transferred. My mum wouldn't let me go until I had a job away from home. I transferred as a medical stenographer for the Royal Adelaide Hospital. And John would, at a younger age, he would have to try and get his parents' car and come and see me, and then if he was in Adelaide, he would ring. So it was always a distance relationship. As we got a little bit older, I'd always wanted to go to New Guinea, Papua New Guinea. So one day I just rang up Reverend Gahadi, because in the Lutheran Mission and the Baptist Church, there are missionaries in New Guinea. And Reverend Gahadi said, "What can you do, Joylene?" I said, "I can type." He said, "Well, we need someone straight away." He said, "I'll organise a flight and come to Adelaide and meet you." And he said, "Then we'll go from there." Well, within a couple of weeks, I was flying from Port Lincoln to Adelaide, Adelaide to Port Moresby, Port Moresby to Lae, and at Lae we got this little plane. That's really interesting. And there was a white pilot. There was four seats, and I was in the seat at the front. A New Guinean lady that was breastfeeding a pig in the second one behind me. True. I was 18.
When I read that story, I didn't know whether there was a comma after a lady breastfeeding.
And she was actually breastfeeding a pig. Yeah. In Papua New Guinea, pigs are held in high esteem. They are held in as part of their family, and they're also used as bargaining for weddings and that sort of thing. But I was very young, and then also behind me were six chooks in a billum, that's a bag, and they were going like that. So that was my introduction to Papua New Guinea, but there's more to come. When I got to Goroka, I got out of the plane, and then you go onto a buckboard jeep, kind of a jeep, and there was about four New Guineans, and then you have to drive. They drove me to Rintaby Training Teachers College, and you actually go down the mountains and across string bridges, and it had been raining, so they all jumped out because they knew at the other side you had to put your foot down and you go vroom, straight up the hill. And they did this, and I'm thinking, this is real, wow, different. And mountains like you have never seen before. If you've been to New Guinea, you know that. I finally arrived at Papua New Guinea, but there were 400 students, and they go in a ring, and you have to shake hands with every one of them. And it was really different because I didn't realise that they all spoke pidgin English, and hardly anyone could speak English. So I met Reverend Brand, Mr. Colin Rollock, and myself were the white people, and Irene Heater, but she left. So you like Hadam Samsung Noktuk or No Nogot, Mino Sawi, Lik Lik Taso. So I had to learn to speak pidgin English. And I've forgotten a fair bit over the time because we're talking about 1968. I absolutely loved it. I had to translate the English programs into pidgin English, and before I could go into the classrooms and teach adult New Guineans their years 1, 2, and 3, and they would go back to their villages. There's over 600 languages in Papua New Guinea. And just to learn another language, it took me ages. It's Watahutahiawe is good morning, and Etahutahiawe is good afternoon. So that's just another language that lives side by side to Rintaby Training Teachers College. I actually got homesick when I was away. And meanwhile, because I had to tell John that I was going to Papua New Guinea, he actually left the farm. There's another story there, and his story maybe one day will come. He went Perth, go west, young man, go west. He went to Perth, and he ended up at Darwin. So, and he would write to me, cherishing me, even though he wasn't sure about me then because I'd gone away. And he gave me a little choker with all these little pearls on it, and I absolutely loved it. So when I got home, there he was. He came all the way from Darwin to see me. We got older then. And he said, "Would you come back up to Darwin with me?" I thought, oh, well, maybe. His parents knew my parents, so we travelled by bus all the way up to Darwin. He spoke to too many girls, so I wasn't real happy when I arrived at Darwin. And I said to him, he said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "Why, Women's Youth Hostel?" And he went to the Baptist Hostel. So he actually had to ring me up and take me out, which was really lovely. And then one day he said, "Joylene," he said, "marry me and I'll take you around the world." I thought, wow, this sounds pretty good. And I rang up Mum and you need to know that my parents knew John's parents. He lived a little bit away, so it was a little different. I thought, huge money to go home and have this huge wedding, because we didn't have a lot of money. So we worked really hard, and we got married in 1973. I come from Port Lincoln, by the way. That's that photo. And, we left. So off we went, and we got to London. It was so expensive in London. It was nearly going to take all our money. So we went into a shipping agency and we said, have you got a job for us? And he said, yes. So they took us to Glasgow, and then 200 kilometres out in the North Sea, we boarded a ship called the MV Bembridge. Now, initially in the agency, I was supposed to be a hostess on a luxury yacht, and John was going to be the deckhand. When we got on board this survey ship, the captain was Irish and had this big red beard down to his toes. And he said, Joylene, can you cook? And I said, yes, for John and me. And he said, you're the cook because our cook has just had a big tin of peas dropped on his toes. And he said, he's flown out. So he said, you are the cook. And in the North Sea, or even in Ireland and England and Scotland, they have kippers and black pudding and food that I've never heard of. So I got out a cookbook and I worked all night in my head of what I was going to do. I had to cook three-course meals for breakfast and for lunch and for dinner. Like, the men worked continuously. Now, you need to know that I was the only female on board. My life has just been unbelievable. God's blessing. And I studied to cook. And I got clever after a while. I could cook two big roasts so that I'd have cold meat for lunch. And the men on board were extremely selected for this task. They would sail the ship. It was a survey ship between Stavanger, Norway, and Glasgow, putting down the gas pipelines, gas buoys, for the pipeline to come, for the gas. So that was a venture in itself, and we got equal pay, and John was not even a deckhand. He was actually had to do all my dishes, so all I did was cook. He had to clean the toilets and empty the rubbish bins, and we were in a storm, and I love that hymn. We were in a storm, and John thought he could just wash the big bins out by just putting them over the side with the chains, but the water got into the bins and it was too heavy and he couldn't get it back up. So the chains actually snapped. So he said to the captain, he said, I don't know what happened last night. He said, the storm came, and he said, washed all the bins over.
Not much has changed here, because you told me the other day that John was doing his washing in the tender.
Absolutely. Right?
Washing in the tender and...
He found that it rained through the night, and instead of doing his ordinary washing, he jumped in the dinghy because it's full of rainwater, and he washed all his clothes in the dinghy. So nothing much has changed. So from there, we actually went to... we had a lot more money, but one of the Irishmen on board said, you cannot go back to Australia without going to Ireland. So we went to Ireland. We both kissed the Blarney Stone. You have the gift of the gab. You climb up all this big tower, but you have to lean back and you've got to kiss the other side, which is a tower. And if you look down, you can actually see the soil. So John and I both kissed the Blarney Stone. Loved Ireland. So much slower. It's just amazing people, amazing country.
There's some creative ways that you made money on the way that you were hit. Tell us one of those ways in terms of selling blood.
When we got to Athens, we were running out of money. We didn't have a lot of money. And we sat down on these steps and John looked and said, hey, we can sell our blood. There must have been a sign there with some dollars. So we walked in and we sold, John had donated his blood. And then he said, Joylene, he said, you do it. And I don't really like needles. But I did it. It hurt like anything because the lady, she moved the jar around, shaking it up and down to get some more blood. But it really hurt. And what happened is we were nearly sitting back for after this. A lovely Greek lady came out. She was all in black with a little bit of black, like a hood. And she's saying, thank you, thank you. John's blood that's O negative went straight to a little girl's life that was in danger who had just had an accident just next door. And they used John's blood to save a life. But there's another story too, and we walked around Athens, and we everywhere we walked, we came upon this Trinidadian family, and they had two kids, and it was just lovely to have a family and chat. Anyway, when they shook hands with us, they were very, very dark. They shook hands with us. He shook hands with me and went like this. And I thought, whoa, he's put something in my hand. And it was a roll of notes. I was too scared to look until they left. And then I opened it. I said, John, look what we've got. So we continued and we went to through Italy, Greece, Yugoslavia, which is Croatia, and Canada. Now, we got to Canada and I'm not going to talk much about that. So we did a lot of things and I'm going to miss a lot of countries and tell you because I want to get onto the family and the relationships. So we came back to Australia, but we were in Vancouver and we got a telegram and said, please come home for the harvest. We'd been away for 14 months by then, 14 months of hitchhiking. And it was challenging too. So we went home and John's brother had been run over. So his parents sent us a telegram and said, please come home and help with the harvest. So I went home from Port Lincoln to Elliston, and just out from Elliston is Mount Wedge. And that's where John's family in station country is. He's a real country boy. And unfortunately, we had 3 to 4 years of droughts. And in that time, I actually had another miracle, where Sophia was born in 1976. Tanya was born in 1977. And their birthday is 40 and 41 next week. So I had two baby girls. But after 4 years of drought, and John has 5 brothers, remember, John says, let's go. Go, yeah, go west, young man, go west. So we packed up and we left with $600, two baby girls, a trailer, an air conditioner, and a spin dryer for the nappies. So I wanted a spin dryer. So you need to know, during this time, John became a Lutheran for me, and we went to church faithfully. And only looking back have I realised that not only has my parents been cherishing me, God has been cherishing me, and looking after both of us all the way. Because when we got to Perth, we didn't know where we were going at all. And I think the very first night, we may have stayed in the caravan park, and we went to church the Sunday. And John said to the minister, Pastor Bartholomew, we really don't know where to stay. We haven't got that much accommodation. He said, we have got a home, an Alcoholic Anonymous's home that's vacant. You can go in there immediately. And that was huge. The house was huge. And as soon as we switched the lights on, we had so many visitors from previous alcoholic people who thought that we were open for business. So we met so many people, it was amazing, and that's God's blessing too. And we never turned them away, we talked to them and we wanted to know and have a cup of tea. And I had two little girls at that time. I can remember this huge, big, long passageway, and Tanya was a toddler too, and her eyes were as big as, huge marbles, bigger than that, you know, balls. But she'd in her mouth, she couldn't get a ping pong ball out, she couldn't breathe. And she was toddling, and I'm thinking, she can't breathe. And her cheeks were out like this, because even though it's a ping pong ball, she didn't know how to get it out. There's a couple other stories too. So naturally, you just do what you do, and out come the ping pong, and she could breathe. But John had a plan, God had a plan for us. We weren't supposed to stay in Perth, and he wanted to buy a crane. Huge dollars. No one would look at us, not one bank. And he found the crane he wanted, and he got his ticket, and he found the crane that he wanted. It was Mr. D. Candilo. But no bank would loan us any money, so Mr. D. Candilo said, I'll go take you to my bank, and they wouldn't finance us either. And then he said, I will finance you. So he financed us. So as soon as we got the crane, Mr. D. Candilo was financing us. I just went along with John. Huge money. And we travelled up north to Port Hedland. And Brambles took the crane and dry hired it for $1,000 a week. We paid for the crane in 12 months. And John got work, and our baby number 3 was due in Port Hedland. So we're at Port Hedland now. And John was working. The crane was paid for. We had a caravan by then with 2 little kids, and I was pregnant. And there's a lovely lady called Beryl Jeffcoat. She knocked on the door and she wanted a donation for Salvation Army. Love the Salvation Army. Love the Baptists too. And I love you guys as well. Anyway, she said, Joylene, how are you feeling? I'm out here, you know, in a caravan. And I said, I'm a little bit worried. I said, John's still working away. He's been working away all the time. And I said, my baby is due and I'm worried about the kids. Because you've got to remember, I didn't have mum and dad there. Very few friends, but I didn't want to put two little kids with someone I didn't really know. I didn't know Beryl either. And Beryl said, Joylene, she said, I'll have them. And I said, no, I said, I can't do that. She said, look, I foster children. So to cut a long story short, in between the next few weeks, we would visit Beryl and she took my kids for that time. John came in and a baby Shane was born. After Port Hedland, we went back to Port Lincoln in a few years to see my mum and dad. That was a blessing because I didn't know that my mum had cancer. When she was diagnosed, she died 12 weeks from the date she was diagnosed. So she died really young, and my dad was a lot older, and it was really traumatic. But in amongst that time, we were heading to Harvey Bay. Oh, I just must have told you, John set up a Penacrane hire base in Port Lincoln, but there came a stage where you either get bigger or get out. We actually chose to get out, so we sold the business, and we came to Harvey Bay.
Before we get into that stage of your life, how have you, because you've done so much. I mean, I'm tired just listening to you. And I said to Joylene the other day, I think you should have my job. But how have you juggled been a mother and working and been a wife? How have you done that?
Well, initially I said to Pastor John when we were talking about this, I actually said hard, but that was the wrong word. It's actually challenging because I can remember the three little kids, they were growing up by then, remember, and they weren't quite at school, and that was in Port Hedland, South Hedland. And John came home and I said, they're all yours. And I walked out, I really had it, and they were all yours. There's another story there too. But anyway, I got in the car and I went from South Hedland to Port Hedland and I looked at the sea. And I thought, I wonder how much time I can leave him, let him leave to be with the kids. He was actually home this time. And I went home and he had fed them, he had bathed them, they were asleep and everything had been done. And I thought, wow, I should do this more often. So in amongst that, John actually helped me as much as he could. Every time he was home, we had a little posty bike, he would take them for little rides. And in the middle of this, I actually began my study, and I know that I was really worried. That's another story a little bit later on, but I'll just tell you this of how he helped. I had to put an assignment in, and I'm running out of time. And I said, John, I said, it's such a beautiful day, but I've got so much work to do. And he said, well, would you like to study outside? And I said, love to. So he pulled a single bed mattress out, he put an umbrella up. He put a little table, a jug of water and glasses and a couple of pillows, and I think he even grabbed a whole heap of typewriter paper on the side, and I thought, oh, that's really nice. And then he left, and that's with the kids, and I had that quiet time. So there's little things that really count, and that's part of the cherishing.
So he's what we call a keeper. John's a keeper. Is there ever a time in your marriage, and I've just been honest here, where you thought he's not a keeper? And did he ever frustrate you or exasperate you?
Oh, heaps of times.
Okay.
Heaps of times.
Was there ever a time where it came to a crunch, though?
Oh, look, I don't know what it was about, but one day I was so angry. It takes a lot to get me angry. I was really, really angry. I've got no idea what it was about. So it must have been insignificant. But I was so angry, so I said, that's it. I am going to pack my bags and I'm going to leave. He stopped and he looked at me and he said, good. He said, I'm going to pack my bags and come with you. Who would say that?
John Penner would say that.
Who? I think I said, but that's the point. I don't want you with me. But whatever it was, it calmed down. And you know what? It must have been insignificant because I can't remember what that particular time was about. But he is hilarious and humour helps.
So, two girls and a boy. Tell us a little bit about the challenges of having young children, and particularly Shane, because, I mean, Shane was a boy, grew into a teenager. There were some challenging times. You want to tell us one story about that?
I certainly can. Teenagers. Now, you've got to remember, I had 3, 2 and a baby. So imagine when they're 15, 14 and 12, and it goes up like that. Shane still believes that he grew up in a household of girls. But I took on really big jobs. When I got to Hervey Bay, there's a story there. I moved from a teacher aide to Bay Accommodation Support Services Manager. So I had no qualifications. That's why I started to study. And I am in charge of this huge organisation. And one weekend I had to go to Hobart for a seminar. It's ACROD, the Australian Peak Body of Disability. Now, in this time, the girls are actually away. I put them in uni, so they've grown up. There's Shane and me. John's away doing cranes at Proserpine. So I'm moving fairly quickly, and I'm so sorry. 66 years in 30 minutes. I'm sorry.
You're doing well.
Okay. So Shane, he was a bit different. The girls were good. So we had an outdoor spa, so I jumped in the spa just before the weekend when I was going in the morning to fly out to Hobart. And I happened to look up the roof. And all in the gutter of the roof were these pot plants full of, like, little tomato plants. But they weren't tomato plants. They were marijuana plants. And I looked at them and my heart went boom, boom, boom. There's all these marijuana plants in pot plants growing so healthily. I had no idea. And here I am leaving Shane for the whole weekend by himself, because he must have been around about 14. And I'm flying to Tasmania. And I thought, wow, what am I going to say? Shane came home. Hi, Mum. I said, Shane, I'm really disappointed. I said, what are all these pot plants doing up there? And he said, oh, they're not mine. Yeah, right. And I said, but this is our house. I said, these are ours. And he said, yeah, peer pressure, Mum, peer pressure. And I said, Shane, I said, the timing was all wrong. I think I would have been really angry at him if I wasn't going away the next morning. I was really worried. So I said, Shane, I said, the timing is all wrong. I said, this is the first weekend that I am leaving you in charge of this house. So I'm going in the morning. I said, I just don't want to talk about it. And I actually went to bed. I really was worried. And then I got up early in the morning. I thought, this is not enough. This is not good enough. So I wrote him a letter and said, Dear Shane, I love you very much. I'm heading out, so you won't see me this morning. But I'll be back Tuesday and your father will be back next Thursday. Lots of love, Mum. I deliberately didn't say anything about these pot plants. Okay? So I flew to Hobart, really worried, and I opened the suitcase and there's this letter. Hi, Mum. And it's got a heart and an arrow through it. I can nearly remember it off by heart. Hi, Mum. By now you are wondering what to wear. And he didn't know how to spell wear, so there's three words. You know, W-E-R-E, the wear, W-H-E-R-E, and I think the other wear. And he said, I don't know how to spell this that word. And he said, don't worry about this marijuana thing, just peer pressure. I will behave myself, except for the huge party that I'm having on Saturday night. And then he said, ha ha, only kidding. By the way, I like this letter so much. Please keep it for me until I'm 21. So, you know, kids are really precious. If you cherish them, that stress just left. So God bless me so that I didn't have to worry for that weekend just by having that letter. And look how Shane retaliated. If I'd gone mad at him, he probably would have just taken all the pot plants down and smashed them or whatever when I got back neat and tidy. Do I need to check out what I was wrong and just say?
All right, I can ask you a question. You're really clear about the hand of God in your life as a person and as a couple, and there's one particular incident that you related to me when you were travelling into a storm or into a cyclone. Would you mind just telling us that? I don't know whether that fits into the sequence, but that's a really good story.
And
it's a powerful testimony to the protection of God.
I have to stand up for this one. I signed up to become qualified, the Bachelor of Community Welfare degree, and I travelled a lot. I joined James Cook University, but in amongst that, one time I had another appointment for an interview for a job down at Maryborough. But John was in at this time at Townsville, and we were with friends. We know so many people in so many places, amazing people. And we heard on the radio that the cyclone was coming in to Townsville. And John knew that south of Townsville there's a river and the Bruce Highway gets cut forever. It's my worst nightmare. I'd be a real advocate for the Bruce Highway to have two lanes all the way right through the Cairns. Anyway, John looked at me. It was quite late at night, 10:30-ish. He said, Jolene, he said, what if we leave now? And I said, yes, that's okay, that's fine. He said, that way we'll miss the cyclone and we will be in Maryborough in time for your interview. I said, okay. So I thought it was night time. So we jumped in the car. Oh, I don't know, Mitsubishi, I can't remember what car we had. It worked. So he was driving and I was nice and warm in a doona. And as we're going south, the rain actually had come in quite heavy. It must have come in a lot faster than I thought. And the wipers are going. Then way in the distance, we could see a little bit of a light on the road, and John put the foot on his brakes to slow down. He could see it too. And then he said, oh, Joylene, he said, I've lost it. And he said, put his hand on the, the door handle. And he said, oh, nothing, Joylene, I've lost it. And we skidded off the road and straight into the river. And we were in the river. I could feel it. The car went vroom, straight in the river. I could feel it. I'm still sitting here. I'm amazed. The wipers are going. The lights are still on. And the rain is still coming in. You know, I'm warm. I'm nice and warm. This true story. I'm still amazed. And the water, the car actually went down and then it came up a little bit and the water was rushing and it's really dirty and there's logs and there's sticks and leaves, and then all of a sudden the water's right by my window and they've all gone past. I thought, wow, this is amazing. And then a big wave came. You know, before the big wave, I could remember thinking, uh-oh, the back must be heavier than the front, because the back actually went down like this and the front started to come up. It's God's plan. And I could see it coming up a bit, and then a big wave came and it turned the car, washed the car towards, must have been a bit of bitumen, and it screamed, like the wheel took off and went, like that. And I'm still... And the car went on the road. John's got one hand on the wheel, probably still the hand there, I can't remember. And it went through the river on the road and out the other side. And we're driving along. And I said, are you all right? And I'm still here. He said, no. And John said, are you all right? And I said, no. So he pulled up and he gave me a big hug. That's a true story. That's a blessing, because we could have been a statistic. And in my life, there are real miracles all the time. And then I thought, God gives us all miracles every day of our life. It's just that we don't know about it. But that one, I knew about that one, you know, because that was amazing. So, yeah, that's about it.
We're kind of running out of time a little bit, but I just want to ask you one question as we finish, and I really want to thank you for sharing and wish we had all day, I think. What does it mean for you to be loved and cherished? What does it mean for you to be treated as a woman of dignity?
This is coming straight from the heart. Do you know if you're cherished and you're loved by God, you have no fear. You can do whatever you want to do, and that's why it's so important to cherish and love one another, to cherish your partner, your spouse, your wives, your husbands, because if you've got no fear and you are cherished, you can do anything. But it's even more than that, you can do what God wants you to do. Because I've never really preached about religion before, and this is like a wake-up. God's always been in my life. I just always knew that. But when you talk about it, when you ask me those questions, look at all those miracles along the way. And when you're sick and when you're down, and God is still with you, remember that footsteps along the way? God's carrying you when you think that you're alone. So, yeah, amazing. No fear. You can just do whatever you want to do. And you can grow and you can, what else can I say? Just that it's amazing to be cherished. I've got a last little thing to finish. This is what I want to finish now, is do not worry. I've always had this in my thoughts. Do not worry about what to eat, what to wear or put upon your feet. Trust and pray, do the best today, then leave it in the hands of the Lord. And amen. Just before I leave, I just really want to thank you, because there's so much more to say. Because with the blessings of this community and the blessings and the prayers of everyone else, Tanya's still battling. She's cancer-free. And I have never met so many wonderful friends and friendship. And you people are amazing. And Pastor John and Karen and Glenn and Julianne and Desley and Bob and all the rest, and Judy and John and all the lovely people who have absolutely embraced me. It's amazing. So thank you. That's it.
Let's give Joylene a hand. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.